You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 22nd April. Today, 1977, first use of optical fiber. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Studios in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Carl Maparwana. The strong results from PSG Financial Services, previously PSG Consult. A lot of it coming, of course, from their wealth division. Old Mutual wealth investment strategist Isaac Odendaal, Fed cycles, and if central bankers can cut ahead of the Federal Reserve. We've already seen some EM markets do that. Bianca Bottas from Citadel Global, changing role of treasury function. Also, what is treasury function, I suppose? This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Treasury pension funds working flat out to honour three-pot system deadline. Some challenges and complexities will only be addressed after the 1 September implementation date, says an official. Business Day, Mondi averts bidding war for DS Smith. A higher counter-offer for the group sees Mondi step back rather than up their price. Morning markets. US was very red on Friday, where S&P down 0.9, NASDAQ off 2.1%. Over in the East, it's all green. Sydney up 0.6%, Tokyo up 0.7%, Hong Kong 1.6% higher, and Tencent 4.7% higher. Commodities, however, all red. Gold 2,379, Brent 86.61, Platinum 944, Palladium $1,031 an ounce. The Rand is 1908, Bitcoin 65,200, and top 40 opening call, green open, 590 points or 0.9% to the up.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Carmen Mepawani, independent analyst. Carmen, appreciate the early morning time. The PSG Financial Services, previously PSG Consult. Those results which came out latish on Thursday. A really good set of numbers in a stock that's been doing quite well, notwithstanding a stock market that hasn't. But as I said in the intro, a lot of this is from their wealth rather than just a sort of traditional brokerage.
No, definitely. Simon, you and I have discussed this before, the concept of having an investment holding company. Mm. And you'll remember in March of 2022, PSG Group decided to unbundle to give investors their own opportunity to decide where their money should go. So this PSG Financial Services, one division that came out of that delisting. And you're correct, it's had a really strong result. We've seen that the dividend is up 17%. That dividend yield is still quite low at about 2.6%, but the payout remains quite high. But that's key for stock of this nature, number one. Number two, it looks to be that they're hoping that cash flow will improve in the near future, and in that way get that payout ratio down to about between 40 to 60%. I mean, you're not talking about small money here. You know, you mentioned the driver from PSG Wealth, which contributes about 60% to earnings. But if we look at the absolute numbers, they're managing in the financial services about 406 billion rand, of which the wealth covers about 355 billion. So I think for this stock, quite strong. If you look at their dividend history, it's always been stable. So that's always, well, for the group as well, that's always been something key to look out for. But I think for investors as a whole going forward, it's going to be what happens to cash flow. Are they able to grow it and keep that stable?
I take your point on that, because to some degree, your 407 billion gives you, I mean, it almost gives you at the beginning of the year revenue that you know is coming, but it's that growth that then becomes the real component, and particularly can they grow that cash flow.
Exactly. And that is absolutely it. You can't be distributing from the absolute money. It's got to come from growth, right?
Yeah.
So the focus there is where are you investing? You've mentioned the fact that the JSE has been struggling. And in the PSG announcement, they did touch on the fact that at this level, global is definitely something that is key for investors right now, specifically after the Reg 28 adjustment to 45% for offshore investments.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. Yeah, of course, more of the follow-up, a change of direction. Mondi PLC, who were looking to take out an international paper company, DS Smith, and then came out on Friday and said, you know what, there's been a competing offer. We're not going to up our price. And I got to say, kudos to Mondi Management, because far too often you chase price, you overpay, and then it's a horrible deal.
No, definitely. You know, in any investment, the key obviously is what is your valuation.
Yeah.
To give you a sense of, you know, where the bid should be. But even if you get valuation number, it's about what's the best price, particularly based on the growth going forward. And you saw after they ditched this, their plan to purchase, the stock price did jump. So the market is indicating to us that the preference would be for them not to do the transaction. It's I think, you know, as you've mentioned, companies look for ways to grow their earnings. And their top line as well, but it has to be strategic and it has to add value. I think in terms of what the market did for Mondi, in terms of the pricing, is to say, look, maybe look elsewhere and use the money somewhere else and somewhere better.
Yeah, but the price that you pay is so massively important. Don't overpay, whether you're Mondi or whether you're a private shareholder. We'll leave it there. Kamran Meporani, independent analyst. Appreciate the early morning.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting with Isaac Odendahl, Old Mutual Wealth Investment Strategist. Isaac, appreciate the early morning time. I want to start at home, South African Reserve Bank. In a recent note you put out, you mentioned their mandate, stable inflation in the interest of balanced and sustainable growth. Current high rates means we've got no growth. It's almost a choke on the economy. Is our SARB, as some people suggest, getting it wrong with our high rates?
Good morning. Yeah, that's a tricky one. The SARB's argument has been that our biggest constraint on economic growth is, in fact, on the supply side, not the demand side. In other words, you know, where central banks normally play in the demand side, they raise interest rates to lower demand. But our problems are with electricity, logistics, just general poor performance from the public sector, making it very difficult to do business in this country. So that's their argument. And I don't think anyone can disagree that that is, in fact, the case, that we have massive supply side problems and that, you know, we need serious reforms to get to solve that. And, you know, fortunately, we seem to be making some progress in some of those areas. That being said, I think, you know, interest rates could still be a bit too high for the domestic economy, and where they stand now. I mean, if you think of a repo rate at north of 8%, inflation is sort of hovering around 5%. I mean, that's quite a big real repo rate. In other words, once you the gap between the interest rate and inflation. So I think that means the, you know, rates should start coming down soon. You know, we can all quibble 50 basis points here or there, but I think basically SARB policy has been correct over the last couple of years. But I think, yeah, there is definitely room for them to cut rates if you only look at the domestic situation, which I think is where things get a little bit tricky.
Well, so that's in my follow-up. I mean, can we, as you know, truthfully, you did a note and you were talking around planets and, you know, the giant planets. I mean, we're not even a small moon in the global economy, what, about 0.5% of global GDP. Can we cut before the Fed? I mean, we've seen others do it. I mean, Brazil's cut, Chile's cut, Hungary's cut. Can we do that?
We can. I mean, the difference is those economies raised rates very aggressively, which we never really did. I mean, so Brazil went from 2% to 14%. You know, we went from 3.5% to 8.25%. So they had big, aggressive rate moves. I think, therefore, they can still cut. And they have cut quite aggressively. Yes, we can move before the Fed moves, but the SARB is not going to move without having a fairly good idea of what the Fed is going to do. I think therefore, you know, the Fed does sort of limit room for maneuver for central banks, small central banks like the SARB, but also even some of the bigger ones like the European Central Bank and so on. You know, the fear, of course, is that if we cut rates sharply and they don't, then you're going to end up with further rand weakness, and that is going to feed into higher inflation. So that is, I think, the main reason why the SARB will want to keep a very close eye on what the U.S. Central Bank is doing.
I take your point on that. We're kind of defending our rand, because if we don't defend our rand, then we get inflation. So in a roundabout way, they are 100% on mandate. If we take it offshore, U.S. inflation initially fell fast. And there was a point last year where it was just like absolutely collapsing. But it's now been stuck sort of plus 3% since June of last year, currently 3.8% in April. This is a factor of, the truth of the matter is, the U.S. economy remains quite strong. And therefore, getting that inflation back to the 2% target is proving fairly sticky.
Yeah, and the Fed officials all speak about having the confidence that inflation is falling and is on a stable trajectory. Mm. You know, the confidence before they can start cutting rates. And as Powell himself said last week, you know, the recent strong data, both on the growth side and the inflation side, suggests that confidence is not there yet. So I think that does mean that they will want to wait another month or three before cutting rates. However, there's another complication, which is that there are two broad inflation measures in the US, CPI, yeah, and then there's another one called PCE. And the PCE is actually the one the Fed looks more closely at. And we'll get that number next week. And that number tends to run quite a bit lower than CPI, and is probably moving closer to the Fed's target, and therefore still does give them the room to cut rates later this year. But as I said, it has definitely been postponed. I mean, the market initially priced in March cuts, and now it's sort of talking about July-ish.
I mean, at one point, we're talking about six cuts, and there are not even six meetings left this year. So there's no chance we're getting less. And of course, that PCE, smaller weight to rental inflation and other small tweaks. But I take your point. It does look better than the traditional CPI. We'll leave it there. That's Isaac Odendaal, Old Mutual Wealth Investment Strategist. Isaac, appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Can SARB cut ahead of the Fed? I like Isaac's point there. Yes, but, and the but is, if we're too far ahead, Iran weakens, inflation comes back. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
When you stay invested over time in Stanlib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money's in for some smooth sailing. With our global partners, JP Morgan Asset Management at the helm, your money can withstand the pressure and bad weather day-to-day market conditions cause. All aboard? Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Bianca Burtis, director at Citadel Global. Bianca, appreciate the time today. One of the themes of 2024, there's lots of themes, but we're seeing shifting global risks. You know, aside from 17 plus national elections, we've got two wars, we've got high interest rates. This is a challenging time for treasury management, I would imagine.
Good morning, Simon. Yes, absolutely. Definitely a challenging time for treasury management. You have all these moving parts, which is creating quite a dynamic and volatile environment to operate in. As you mentioned, we've got elections coming up throughout the year, escalating geopolitical crises, and then obviously also the unusually high interest rates that come with unusually sticky inflation that's just not abating at the moment.
And the role of treasury management, as I see it, it's about reducing exposure to financial threats. And that might be something as simple as managing cash flow or as complex as multi-currency supply chains or acquisitions. I mean, it is a complex process, even probably when it's just cash flows.
Absolutely. It's really about managing the financial risk a business faces. And as you mentioned, that can be anything from managing loans with a certain interest rate, cross currencies, cash flow management. So it's really a wide array of elements that your treasury custodians need to look after and make sure that they cover all the risk and protect the business in the process.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. I saw one of the listed companies, they publish a sense when they pay their loans back, and it's hundreds of millions of rands. And it suddenly struck me that that's quite a bit of planning to have those hundreds of millions. And it's around technology. It's around, and I imagine a lot of it these days is data driven, and particularly big data. We've got access to it. We've got processing power to it as well these days.
Yes, I think data is becoming more and more important. You know, not only does the data give us an better understanding of exactly what our risk looks like, but it gives us the ability to really predict and quantify those risks in different environments. You know, when you have an environment that is as dynamic and as volatile as what we are seeing at the moment, it's really important to be able to plan for certain scenarios and make sure that you are protected either way. As you mentioned, with some of the listed companies, you know, you specifically see it in some of the REIT spaces where they have become so under pressure in this environment with elevated interest rates that they can't refinance. And you're actually seeing them hold back dividends to actually pay off debt because they can't afford to go and refinance at the current interest rates, and they can't afford to actually make loan payments at the current interest rates. So it's actually very wide based. And I think, you know, the data availability and the technology availability that we have in the market at the moment really gives us an opportunity to fully understand the scope of these risks and plan for scenarios that could swing either way.
I want to come back to data in a moment, particularly AI, but I was also thinking, I mean, you mentioned REITs, but I mean, I think in financial institutions, increased regulation, cyber threats are an ever-growing threat as well. This is not the simple job it might have once been, I don't know, maybe 40 years ago, and maybe I'm naive, maybe it never was a simple job.
I don't think it was ever a simple job, but I think risk management has evolved along with business model changes. You know, I think historically we've looked at individual transaction-based decisions, and those were mostly based on a combination of judgment and underwriting criteria, where now we are more inclined to look at it as an aggregated portfolio of risk within a business, and we can actually manage that more efficiently with more robust analytical tools. But it is becoming increasingly difficult, I think, especially when you start bringing into the equation your cyber risks, for instance. What does that mean in terms of bolstering up your system? What does that mean for integration between, let's say, financial institutions to communicate on a system-to-system basis rather, let's say, telephonically or via email that could easily be intercepted?
Is that the adoption of the open banking idea, which you've put forward previously as a huge opportunity for South Africa?
Yes, sir. Banking is actually something that is very prevalent, especially in the European area. In South Africa, however, we haven't really seen it taken off. We've seen some of the banks giving access in terms of APIs for system integration from a treasury management perspective, where you can utilize, let's say, SWIFT systems to see your balances from all the banks on your own treasury platform. But we haven't really seen South African institutions come to the market and making all this information available to clients. And I think that's due to a number of reasons. I think firstly, South African consumers tend to be a little bit more hesitant, tend to be a little bit more concerned when it comes to corruption, fraud, those type of things, because it is so prevalent in our environment. Mm-hmm. But I also think we face some security concerns, regulatory and technical issues, and then consumer awareness and comprehension in terms of what does open banking mean and what will it enable you to do should you actually achieve an environment where all products and solutions from all financial institutions is freely available and accessible.
I want to come back to the technology, artificial intelligence, large language models. I'm imagining, I mean, they're not even yet a year and a half old, really, from when OpenAI launched ChatGPT. But I imagine there's a lot that can work in that space as well within treasury management.
Yes, so some of the key things that we've looked at in terms of improvement that we've seen is efficiencies and the accuracy of complex data, the identification of data anomalies, and in the movement in customer and competitor behavior, which used to be really, really hard to monitor and get a grasp on. I think by analyzing large data sets in real time, businesses can make informed choices based on current and relevant information instead of having that continuous lag and analyzing effect.
I take your point, is that real time, and particularly because of the size of data that we have. We'll leave it there. Bianca Bottas, Director, Citadel Global, always appreciate the insights. That's it for today. We were chatting with Chantal Marx around Richemont, and if you were buying, we were chatting with Skalk Lowe around the Vodacoms and MTNs, the telcos rather, and if you were buying. And I got to say, the short answer was no. The vast majority was said not for you. There was a little bit of love for MTN and Vodacom, but most are saying it's a sector you stay away from. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. China, is it looking better?
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.